The Bad Batch is back for its third and final season. Will our band of mercenaries stand up against the Empire? Will they rescue Omega? And I can definitely admit I got one of my predictions wrong. Which one, you ask? We're going to find out all that and more as we dive into The Bad Batch season premiere on this episode of Geekville Radio.
Geekville Radio.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes. Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio, coming at you with number 348 of Geekville Radio. We're dedicating this episode entirely to the Season 3 premiere of The Bad Batch on Disney+. Everybody who's heard me talk about this show knows how much I like it, and this is the third and final season. We're probably going to get a lot of big stuff to come, and in case anybody needs a quick recap, Season 2 left off where the Empire had destroyed Kamino, the cloning facilities that we saw in the Attack of the Clones, Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. They seized Nala Se, and one of the head cloners took her and Omega to Mount Tantus. Cid betrayed the heroes, alerted the Empire to their presence, so the Batch is on the run from the Empire as well. And Omega and Crosshair are also being held at Mount Tantus, where the Empire has begun cloning experiments of their own. We also had Tech die. He sacrificed himself. And the surviving members of the team, because we're down to Hunter, Echo, and Wrecker now, three from the original five, they've vowed to find Omega at all costs. So that's where we are at going into this premiere. And I had my predictions a couple weeks back. I'd like to think I'm still pretty good at making some of these predictions. I do think we're going to get more of the team biting the big one in this one. I actually will also think Mount Tantus may very well be destroyed as well, because that would cause a loss in a lot of the cloning technology and why it would take 40 years for Palpatine to return somehow. That's my big one for this year. Obviously, we're not going to figure out if I'm right or wrong in that for several weeks. But as we did expect, the first three episodes, they took place almost entirely on Mount Tantus. We don't think we even saw any of the Bad Batch themselves until the second episode. The first episode, it was mainly just Omega dealing with being held captive on Mount Tantus and feeding the Lurker Hounds and the delectably evil Dr. Hemlock just being creepy and cruel to everybody. We got the resident pet or familiar. Omega befriended one of the Lurker Hounds, Batcher. I think it's kind of funny that the dog is called Batcher in a show called The Bad Batch. And we also found out why Omega was there in the first place. Basically, Dr. Hemlock was using Omega as a lure for Nala to continue to make attempts at cloning Force-sensitive being, or at least putting, or at least making a clone capable of being Force-sensitive. They're calling it M-Count. We all know what it is. It's midichlorians. I don't need to go on anything in that tangent because we all know what that is. But the climax of the story saw Omega and Crosshair escape Mount Tantus. They stole a shuttle, but during the escape, Dr. Hemlock did indeed learn that Omega has a positive M-Count, and Nala had been keeping this information from him. It seems Nala knew all along that Omega would be Force-sensitive, that she'd have the midichlorians needed. And like I said earlier, not seeing any of the team until the second episode did seem a little odd. There was also very little action. I think only really the third episode had any real action in it. That said, the storytelling was solid. This is still a very good springboard into the rest of the season. I can officially lay to rest one of my predictions. I always try to be honest when I talk about my predictions. My prediction originally, and I don't think I was very popular in this opinion, I think most of the other people talking about this were right and I was wrong on this one. I was figuring that since the Bad Batch were designed to have specialties, hence why they were all good at what they were doing, why Crosshair is so good at being a sharpshooter and such, I just assumed they tried to put all of those traits into Omega because she was a really good shot. She seemed to have a natural leadership ability as well. So I thought that was the explanation. She was like the clone version of a Super Skrull, if that analogy makes any sense. But now we know with the positive M count, the reason why she's been so good is, of course, she is Force sensitive. She may not even realize it. And really, when you look at it, the thought of her being Force sensitive, I'll admit, certainly does make more sense. And not only that, I would say that going along this route, trying to build the clone with the high midichlorian count and essentially cloning people that can use the Force, in short, that also brings around one of the oldest tropes in the book of storytelling, certainly in the case of many science fiction and horror tales. Because who do we have as the mastermind to these experiments? We have Dr. Hemlock, the mad scientist, basically. And he is trying to find a way to please the evil overlord in Palpatine. And if this is indeed the case, that Omega's Force sensitive and this could eventually lead to Rey, then that would mean that the evil tyrant, or even the mad scientist, if you even want to give Palpatine that label, is destroyed by his own creation. I mean, that's countless horror stories and thrillers have ended with that, where the mad scientist is ultimately done in by his own creation that may be more of a tragic figure than anything. Although it would mean, though, if Omega is directly related to Rey, shouldn't that make Rey's last name Fett? When you think about it, it just seems to be the funny but logical conclusion. But in all of this, I'd still like to know, what is Dr. Hemlock's goal in all of this? I get that he's a mad scientist, and I'm sure he likes the idea of successful clonings and the ability with the midichlorian count and all that. He wants to please the Emperor, clearly. And of course, he's middle management, so the poop rolls downhill. So if Palpatine's not happy, then Hemlock's not happy, and he gets to take out those frustrations on somebody else. But what does he see fit to gain from these experiments? If the cloning process is successful, what does Hemlock get? I mean, does he get to retire? Does he get minions? Does he get huge amounts of money and basically just live without a care for the rest of his life? Does he want to be his own overlord? Does he get his own planet? Something like this. I'd like to know if Hemlock has anything out of this deal and what the arrangement would be between he and Palpatine if he was successful. Hopefully we'll get an explanation on that in this season. But back to the mad scientist, megalomaniac, being done in by his own creation. Like I said, that is a trope pretty much as old as storytelling itself, but that would go against the whole Chosen One commentary that George Lucas set in motion in the first place. The whole idea of George's movies, at least when they were finalized, was about the tragedy of Anakin Skywalker. It was the rise and fall and redemption of Anakin Skywalker. Those are George's movies. And the sequel trilogy, of course, didn't have really any true Skywalkers in it. Obviously, there was Luke and Leia, but Ben's a solo. So when you put that focus and ultimately have Rey be the one that destroys Palpatine, then what the hell was the Chosen One prophecy about? Because that is one thing I will definitely give credit to George Lucas for, if it is true, his outline. Because it had leaked a while back that if George had done his vision of 7, 8, and 9, that in the end it would have been revealed that Anakin actually was not the Chosen One. Leia was. And people may like that, may hate it. I think it's fine because, again, Leia's one of the core characters going back to the original movie. So it would make sense that she would play that pivotal role, that her becoming essentially the new Chancellor, Princess of the Galaxy or whatever, that is what the Chosen One would be in the end. That's fulfilling the prophecy is her becoming the just and true leader of the known galaxy. So I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent on the sequel trilogy. Maybe I already did, but in the end, I would give these three episodes together, I'd give them probably a B minus. I mean, it was good. They've done better. I've said before with Clone Wars and Bad Batch, when these shows click on all cylinders, they're as Star Wars as you can get. It's really Clone Wars and Bad Batch have been one of my favorite things about Star Wars and Bad Batch, particular for the Disney era. We did not see yet any of the bounty hunters that we saw in the trailer. We did not see Ventress. We did see a follow-up and really a connection to some of the other Star Wars series with the Pike Syndicate and the Durand crime family. Hunter and Wrecker had to deal with them to get their intel on finding Dr. Hemlock and thus finding Omega. We did get the three young clones named Mox, Deke, and Stack, one of which was actually voiced by Daniel Logan. We got those three kids, and I'm assuming we're probably going to see them again. It would not surprise me if there's another animated series set after this one. That would be the continuing adventures of those three. And in the second episode, we got what I think a lot of people were comparing to a Sarlacc pit with the Slither Vine. I mean, I saw those and I thought, boy, James Gunn would have a field day with this show. You know, living vines that just kind of, well, slither over people. Yeah, that wasn't there an old G.I. Joe episode about rapid growing vines that would entangle people? Seems to be a pretty regular scary trope to have vines that can just entangle and strangle people. But I think it could be possible this might be some sort of precursor to the Sarlacc. It very much seemed to act in a similar fashion. You had the big maw, the big teeth, jaw. You had the vine-like tentacles, only these tentacles, when you chopped them up, they kind of became their own entity and scampered off. That's some pretty gruesome stuff when you think about it. And that's the type of stuff that might have given me nightmares if I was a little kid, but I'm assuming we're going to see more of them later on, if not in this series, in other Star Wars animated shows. And I'll also be intrigued to see what happens to Dr. Carr, what happens to Nala. I think they're setting up Dr. Carr to ultimately turn on Dr. Hemlock. I think in the end, she's going to wind up being another one of those tragic figures. She's not necessarily the hero or the villain. She's the villain ally that will probably die in the end, but in doing so will save the day. And she very well may sacrifice herself to save everybody. It'll also be interesting to see what happens inevitably when Crosshair and Omega rejoin the group, because it's clear Crosshair's not going to be staying with the Empire. He literally killed an Imperial officer. That was back in the episode of The Outpost, one of the greatest episodes of anything that there's ever been. So he's going to be marked for life and hunted for life by the Empire. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes back to being the old Crosshair again. That's pretty much covers it. I'm already looking forward to episode 4. I'll be covering that probably in the next episode here of Geekville Radio. Once again, thank you folks for listening. This has been Geekville Radio. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, pretty much wherever you can find podcast, just do a search for Geekville Radio. You can find us. We got this show, which is kind of the flagship show. We got Examining the Doctor about Doctor Who. We got Examining the Dead about the world of horror. Got the Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame, where we talk about some of the more obscure heroes in the history of geekery. And we got the Nostalgia Trip, which, as the name implies, is about pop culture from the past. And then over in the wrestling world, we have Classic Wrestling Memories, where Crazy Train and myself, as the name again suggests, we talk about more old school style pro wrestling stuff. So that's going to do it for this episode of Geekville Radio. If you want to let us know what you think, we're on social media, Facebook, X/Twitter, Instagram. You can find us there at Geekville Radio. You can give us a like, give us a review in the podcatcher you're choosing. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what we can improve on. Let us know if we suck. I welcome all feedback, especially when it is genuine. So we will shut down the power here in the Geekville Radio Studios, and we will talk to you folks again next time. Geek
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.